Hey there. So you've been exploring the book of Deuteronomy, and it seems like you're really curious about its origins. Like, was it actually written by Moses, like tradition says? Or does it come from a much later period?
Yeah, that's a big question.
To help you unpack that, we're going to go on a deep dive into the world of ancient Near East treaties, specifically Hittite and Assyrian ones.
Interesting.
And get this. These ancient documents might hold the key to understanding when and how Deuteronomy came to be.
It's incredible how these treaties, especially the Hittite ones from way back in the second millennium BC, they provide a sort of blueprint for understanding Deuteronomy. It's like they give us a glimpse into the ancient mindset, showing us how people back then formalized agreements and how their worldview shaped those
Oh, we're
agreements.
talking about a time long before email or instant messaging.
Or even regular mail.
Yeah, they had a whole system for making these pacts.
Yes, exactly.
And there's a good chance that system influenced the way Deuteronomy was written.
That's the idea.
Okay, so to guide us through all of this, we'll be looking at the work of some really smart scholars.
All right.
We've got insights from Dr. Robert Van Noy, who's really gone deep into comparing Deuteronomy with these ancient treaties. And we'll also be exploring the work of Meredith Klein.
Oh, definitely. He's a key figure in this whole discussion about Deuteronomy, possibly being much older than many people initially thought.
Okay, so we've got our scholarly guides,
All right.
and we're ready to tackle this question of Deuteronomy's origins.
Yeah.
But before we go any further, can we just break down what these ancient treaties were all about?
Sure.
Like, what exactly is a suzerainty treaty?
So imagine a powerful king known as the suzerain making a binding agreement with a weaker king, the vassal. That, in essence, is a suzerainty treaty. It's like an ancient international relations document setting the terms of their relationship and outlining their responsibilities to each other.
So it's kind of like a King of Kings situation,
Right.
but with a very formal agreement in place.
Exactly.
But what makes these treaties so special, structurally speaking? They must have had some sort of template they followed, right?
They absolutely did. These treaties adhered to a very specific format, almost like a legal checklist. It all starts with a preamble. Think of it as the introduction, where they clearly identify the parties involved. Then comes the historical prologue. And this is crucial. This is where the suzerain recounts all the good things they've done for the vassal in the past, emphasizing their generosity and building this sense of obligation and loyalty.
So it's more than just a dry legal document. It's laying the groundwork for a relationship, rooted in a sense of debt and gratitude.
Yeah, that's a really insightful observation.
Boy.
The historical prologue isn't just about boasting. It's about establishing a moral framework for the relationship.
Interesting.
Then we get to the stipulations. Those are the nitty-gritty details that outline the vassal's specific obligations.
Like what kind of things?
Well, these could range from unwavering loyalty and military support to even exclusive worship of the suzerain's god.
So they covered everything,
Pretty much.
even religion.
Yeah, it was a pretty comprehensive agreement.
I'm guessing there were consequences for breaking the rules, right?
Absolutely. No ancient treaty would be complete without a section outlining the blessings and curses, the consequences for upholding or violating the agreement.
Makes sense.
Obedience brought blessings and favor, while disobedience invoked the wrath of the gods.
Okay, so we've got the parties involved, the backstory, the rules, and the consequences. What's the final piece of this ancient treaty puzzle?
Well, to give the treaty even more weight, they often invoked the gods as witnesses and guarantors, essentially ensuring that the agreement was divinely sanctioned.
So breaking a treaty wasn't just a political offense, it was a religious one. That makes sense. You definitely wouldn't want to mess with a treaty that has the gods backing it up. But here's where things get really interesting. Deuteronomy, this foundational book in the Bible, seems to follow this same treaty structure.
You are absolutely right.
Really?
Cleflin brilliantly points out that you can see Moses acting as a sort of suzerain in Deuteronomy. He reminds the Israelites of God's past faithfulness and blessings, just like in a historical prologue.
Yeah.
And then lays out their obligations to God,
okay,
including exclusive worship and a whole set of societal laws.
So it's remarkably similar
to
those Hittite treaties.
Very much so.
Hold on. So you're suggesting that the book of Deuteronomy, which describes Moses and the Israelites receiving the law from God,
right,
could actually have been written around the same time as those ancient Hittite treaties?
That's precisely the argument Klein I was making.
Wow, that would be huge for understanding its origins.
It would.
So he highlights a crucial detail.
Uh-huh.
Those Hittite treaties from the second millennium BC,
right,
like Deuteronomy, they prominently feature these historical prologues.
Yes.
But when you look at later Assyrian treaties from around the 7th century BC, that element is missing.
Interesting.
So the structure of Deuteronomy aligns more closely with those older Hittite treaties.
It does.
But if Deuteronomy does follow this older treaty structure, what does that tell us about the book itself?
Hmm.
And more importantly, what does it tell us about the ancient Israelites and their worldview?
That's where things get really exciting.
Okay.
By understanding the historical context of these treaties, we can glean a deeper understanding of how the Israelites viewed their relationship with God, their place in the world, and even their sense of history and destiny.
Right.
But before we jump into all of that, we need to address some counter arguments that have been raised about Deuteronomy's origins.
Okay.
Not everyone agrees with Klein's interpretation.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And there are other theories that we need to consider.
All right, let's do it. Okay, so we've laid out some pretty compelling evidence suggesting that Deuteronomy might have roots in a much earlier period than some scholars previously thought.
Right.
But you mentioned that there are counterarguments.
Yeah, there are a few.
What are some of the challenges that have been raised against this idea of Deuteronomy's antiquity?
One challenge comes from a scholar named Franken. He took a close look at the curses detailed in Deuteronomy. And he noticed some interesting similarities between those curses and the ones found in those later 7th century BC Assyrian treaties.
So if the curses in Deuteronomy sound a lot like the curses from a much later period, couldn't that suggest that the book itself was written later?
It's a valid point.
Yeah.
Frank and his research definitely adds another layer to the discussion.
It seems like a pretty strong argument against an early dating.
It does. However, Klein offers a pretty compelling counterargument.
Okay. What does he say?
He points out that curses weren't exclusive to Assyrian treaties.
Mm-hmm.
They were actually pretty common across ancient Near Eastern treaties in general.
So just because they share some similarities doesn't automatically mean Deuteronomy was directly lifted from those later Assyrian treaties.
Yeah, it's like saying that because two recipes both use salt.
Okay.
One must have copied the other. Shared elements don't necessarily point to direct borrowing or influence.
That makes sense.
And Klein strengthens his argument by reminding us that the overall structure of Deuteronomy with that distinctive Hittite-style format and the crucial historical prologue remains a much more defining feature.
So that makes the idea of direct borrowing from Assyrian treaties much less likely.
Much less likely.
Okay, so we have Frank Anna focusing on the curses.
Uh-huh.
But Klein argues that it's not as clear-cut as it might seem.
Yeah.
So what are some other counterarguments?
Well, there's the work of Moshe Weinfeld, who presents a fascinating literary theory.
Okay.
He doesn't buy into the idea of a cultic origin.
Mm.
The notion that the treaty structure was embedded in Israelite rituals and then later used as a framework for Deuteronomy.
Right.
Instead, he believes that Deuteronomy was a clever literary creation.
Okay.
Carefully crafted by court scribes during the reigns of kings like Hezekiah or Josiah.
So instead of being rooted in ancient tradition, it's more of a political document.
Exactly.
Disguised as something older and more authoritative.
Yeah, it almost sounds like a way to legitimize the rule of these later kings.
It does.
That's Weinfeld's take.
Okay.
He sees it as a sophisticated piece of writing, possibly influenced by Assyrian treaties, but ultimately intended to serve a specific political purpose in a later period.
So Klein obviously has something to say about this.
He does. He points out a key weakness.
Okay, what's the weakness?
If Deuteronomy were solely the product of court scribes working for a later king, it wouldn't make much sense for it to center so heavily on Moses' farewell. And the transfer of leadership to Joshua.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It seems like an odd detail to include if you're trying to create a document that supports a different king's authority.
Yeah, why would scribes working for a king like Hezekiah want to highlight this transition from Moses to Joshua?
It doesn't seem to fit their agenda at all.
It doesn't.
The emphasis on Moses' farewell and the passing of the torch to Joshua suggests that Deuteronomy is more deeply rooted in the Mosaic period than Weinfeld's theory allows.
Amber, brings us back to that crucial element we discussed earlier.
Yes, it does.
The historical prologue.
The historical prologue.
Why is the historical prologue so central?
Okay, well, right.
To this whole debate about Deuteronomy's origins.
The historical prologue sets the stage for the entire covenant relationship. It's where the suzerain reminds the vassal of their past generosity, emphasizing that this agreement isn't just a cold legal contract.
Right.
It's built on a history of kindness, favor, and a sense of mutual obligation.
It establishes the emotional and moral foundation for the whole treaty.
It's not just about following the rules.
You know, it's about recognizing a pre-existing bond based on what the suzerain has already done for the vassal.
And the fact that those later Assyrian treaties lack this crucial element gives even more weight to Klein's argument.
It does.
Deuteronomy's close resemblance to those older Hittite treaties, complete with that all-important historical prologue, suggests a deeper connection to that earlier period.
It really does.
It's fascinating how these structural details can offer such valuable clues.
They can.
About a text's origins.
Yeah.
And its place in history.
It's like a fingerprint.
But let's dive a bit deeper into these alternate theories you mentioned.
Okay.
Specifically, the idea of a cultic origin for Deuteronomy. You mentioned that some scholars believe the treaty structure wasn't just a one-time thing for the Israelites, but was actually woven into their religious practices.
Exactly.
Can you expand on that a little?
Absolutely. This theory suggests that the treaty format wasn't just a legal template.
Okay.
But was deeply embedded in Israelite worship and ritual.
Okay.
Imagine a scenario where the covenant renewal ceremonies involved elements that mirrored the structure of these ancient treaties.
So they might have reenacted key parts of the covenant.
Right.
Including the historical prologue, the stipulations, and even the blessings and curses.
Exactly. It almost sounds like a dramatic performance.
Yeah.
Designed to remind them of their obligations to God and the consequences of straying from the covenant.
That's the idea.
And there's a fascinating tidbit that supports this theory.
Oh, what's that?
Even Solomon's prayer at the dedication of the temple reflects a similar covenant structure.
Interesting.
It suggests a deep-rooted pattern in Israelite religious thought and practice, where the treaty format served as a framework for understanding their relationship with God.
So even if Deuteronomy wasn't directly patterned after a specific treaty,
it could still reflect this broader cultural and religious tradition of using the treaty format to express their covenant with God.
Yeah, it's like the treaty structure became a language.
That's a great way to put it.
Through which they understood their faith and their history.
That's incredible.
It highlights the enduring influence of these ancient treaty structures on Israelite thought and practice.
And it shows how exploring these connections can enrich our understanding of biblical texts.
It does.
And reveal deeper layers of meaning.
Absolutely.
But even with all this evidence pointing towards an earlier date for Deuteronomy, can we definitively say case closed? Deuteronomy was written by Moses.
It's important to remember that we're dealing with ancient texts and piecing together historical puzzles is rarely a matter of absolute certainty. Right. We have to weigh the evidence carefully, consider different perspectives, and acknowledge that there's always more to learn.
That's the beauty of historical scholarship, isn't it?
It is.
It's an ongoing conversation. Yeah. We're constantly uncovering new insights and refining our understanding of the past.
It's a journey of discovery.
This discussion about Deuteronomy's origins is a great example of that.
It is.
Even if we can't pinpoint the exact date and authorship with absolute certainty, exploring these connections to ancient treaties illuminates the book in profound ways.
It really does.
So where does all of this leave us?
Yeah.
We've explored various theories, considered compelling arguments for Deuteronomy's antiquity,
yes,
and grappled with some thought-provoking counterarguments.
Right.
What's the key takeaway for someone like me?
I think the most important takeaway is this.
Okay.
By delving into the historical and cultural context of Deuteronomy, particularly its connections to the world of ancient treaties, we gain a much richer understanding of the text itself. We see how deeply ingrained the covenant idea was in ancient Israelite thought.
Okay.
And we begin to appreciate how this treaty structure might have shaped their understanding of God, their laws, and their place in history.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah.
It really is amazing how something like an ancient treaty structure can unlock so much meaning in a text like Deuteronomy.
Right.
It really helps us appreciate the depth and complexity of the book.
It does.
And how it reflects the beliefs and worldview of the ancient Israelites.
It's like having a key that opens up hidden chambers in these ancient texts.
Yeah.
And in the case of Deuteronomy, it reveals a profoundly covenantal way of thinking.
We've talked a lot about the structural parallels between Deuteronomy and those ancient treaties. But I'm wondering if we can go a bit deeper.
Okay.
If this treaty structure was so deeply ingrained in how the Israelites understood their relationship with God, what does that tell us about their faith and their view of history?
That's a fantastic question.
Thanks.
And it gets to the heart of why this whole discussion matters.
Okay.
The fact that their relationship with God was framed in this treaty language suggests that they saw it as a formal agreement. A binding covenant with obligations and expectations on both sides.
So it wasn't just a vague sense of spirituality.
Right.
It was a structured relationship with clear terms and consequences.
And that historical prologue we keep coming back to,
right,
it really emphasizes that this covenant was rooted in God's prior actions.
Okay.
His faithfulness and generosity toward them.
It wasn't just about rules.
It wasn't.
It was about a relationship built on a shared history.
Precisely. And that shared history wasn't just a collection of stories. It was the foundation of their identity as a people.
Wow.
Their understanding of who they were was inextricably linked to their understanding of God and his actions in their history.
So their past informed their present.
Yes.
And their covenant with God shaped their future.
Exactly. It's a profound insight.
It is. It makes me want to go back and reread Deuteronomy with this whole new lens.
I encourage you to do so.
Looking for those echoes of the treaty structure.
Right.
And considering how they might deepen our understanding of the text.
And remember, this is just the tip of the iceberg.
Oh, really?
There's so much more to explore when it comes to Deuteronomy and its connections to the ancient world.
Well, you've certainly given us a lot to ponder.
I hope so.
It's amazing how exploring seemingly technical details. Like treaty structures can open up such profound insights into a text like Deuteronomy.
It's fascinating, isn't it?
It is. We've gone from wondering about its authorship to gaining a whole new understanding of how the ancient Israelites perceived their relationship with God and their place in the world.
It's been a real deep dive.
It has. To everyone listening, we hope this deep dive has sparked your curiosity to keep digging into Deuteronomy.
There's so much more to discover.
We've only scratched the surface.
We have.
But hopefully you've gained a new appreciation for this fascinating book and its enduring relevance.
Absolutely.
So keep exploring.
Keep questioning.
And most importantly,
keep learning.
Thanks for joining us on this incredible journey.